After a decade playing music in New Orleans and on the road, Goody moved to Paris. He was drawn by the newly found Parisian enthusiasm for Black American jazz and the ease of finding work in the rapidly expanding market for African American music. For the next three decades, except during World War II, he worked steadily in France and Europe. Sometimes he was a freelance musician, sometimes a headlining act. He was almost always simultaneously working with the top jazz talent and most successful American impresario band leaders on the continent. Josephine Baker became the toast of Paris and launched Le Tumulte Noir, a Parisian mania for all things African American. Bricktop's famed cabaret and the bars of Montmartre drew the chic and elite of Paris, Europe, and the world. From the mid-20s well into the 30s, the Montmartre section of Paris was a Harlem-style jazz district. The shabby, formerly working-class district lit up at night with cabarets, American-style bars, and vibrant nightlife. But in 1925, when Big Boy arrived, jazz was still just getting organized in France. Before the late 20s, the music played in Paris and called jazz was pretty dismal stuff. Hopped-up ragtime marches or popular dance music. Most musicians, even the Americans, were either playing boisterous cornball, faking, or reading with little expression.
The drummer used to be in the front and had all these different things for making noises. Cowbells and so forth.
Alain Romans, a very good French musician who later performed with Goody, described early jazz performance in Paris.
The drummer was the big attraction, and the musicians used to be behind him on the stand. He used to throw his sticks about and sometimes even stick his tongue out. Little by little, they learned they had to make some music as well.
Gradually, as tours by the orchestras of Benny Payton, Sam Wooding, or early African-American theatrical productions of Cecil and Blake toured Europe and Paris, quite a few good musicians decided to stay. Big Boy was one of the few to arrive on his own initiative. In 1963, he told the San Francisco Examiner,
"Some American musicians were already in Europe. My brother came back from the war and told me how well musicians were doing, and that got me interested."
French musicians before the 30s generally lacked the ability to swing or improvise. So musicians who could were at a premium. With a decade playing jazz under his belt, Goody was a giant among pygmies in more ways than one, which explains why he became ubiquitous in Paris and was working simultaneously for multiple employers. With the arrival of quality musicians in the late 20s, the Montmartre Quarter rapidly transformed into a jazz mecca. The cabarets and bars all featured Black and mostly Black jazz bands or West Indian music. With tolerant law enforcement, an influx of African-American musicians, and the best jazz in Europe, Montmartre became a world-class entertainment destination second to none.
It was a thrilling, wide-open town,
recalled trumpet player Bill Coleman in his autobiography.
Paris had everything that New York had, and then some. The cafes, the bars stayed open 24 hours a day. Living was not expensive, the people were friendly, and a jazz musician was considered a human being.
Coleman and Goody became friends and colleagues. In Europe, as he did in each of his several musical lives, Goody quickly maneuvered himself to a position near the summit of his professional and creative environment.